This is the Andres Segovia Show.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Andres Segovia Show. I am your host, Andres Segovia. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of the program. I got a special one for you today because I got to talk about a subject that affects all of us, whether we noticed it or not. But for a lot of us that have soured on Hollywood, especially when they preach at us, but at the same time, they capitulate to other rules from other countries. They'll take a stand here in bravado, freedom of speech, but they won't apply the same thing where it actually should matter. So in other words, that's virtue signaling because they're all after the almighty dollar, in this case in China. Well, there's a documentary that was just released this month to that effect, and it's called Hollywood Takeover. Here's the trailer. Take a look.
There's something magical about the movies that I just love.
Hollywood invented America to the world in the old days.
And as a medium, it's really powerful. But for some, that power isn't used for good.
Sure, our way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party.
They said, we get a lot of our money out of China. Is there any way you could make this movie a little bit more attractive to the Chinese?
Is it really just about money? Are there other parts at stake?
I had friends in Hollywood who said, this will kill your career. You won't get funding. They're afraid of even mentioning one line.
Chinese influence was playing into what we see in U.S. films.
China said, you can't have that in there. And Hollywood listened.
This is insane. This is a joke, right?
We raised our hand and we dove right into it. But over time, all of us have been punched in the nose.
The Chinese Communist Party followed no rules.
What's at stake? The soul of the nation is at stake.
We want indoctrination access to America. They could basically take over America without firing a shot because they control access to our minds.
And we all know that their goal is global domination.
People have been brainwashed without knowing it.
I want to give a special shout out to the Epoch Times for their excellent coverage as an independent news organization and also entertainment that they're bringing out through their cinema section and documentaries informative like this that they're putting on the Epoch TV. So you want to check their stuff out. Links will be available on the show notes accompanying this episode at www.newsagova.com, including an extended sneak peek at the documentary, which is behind a paywall. But I do recommend you pay you. Vote with your wallet, and the Epoch Times is one of those that I support. I support very few news organizations, maybe like three. My number one is the Epoch Times because I just have to, and I've been doing so for a couple of years now. So that's me and my bias, if you will, but I appreciate what they do. But anyway, I had a chance to sit down with the narrator and the host of the documentary, the trailer we just saw, Tiffany Meyer, and I brought her on the program because I wanted to talk more about this. There were some things that I wanted to flesh out a little more. And there were a few things that I was a little curious about why they didn't make it to the film, which she also addresses. So without further ado, here is my interview with China in Focus's own Tiffany Meyer. Tiffany Meyer, welcome to the Andres Segovia Show. It's great to have you on.
It's an honor to be here.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I wanted to bring you on because you touched on the subject and the Epoch Times and NTD as a whole touched on this because of your recent documentary. Congratulations, by the way, on the release of Hollywood Takeover. I can tell you were flying everywhere and somehow you had to balance that with Super Tuesday. So it was pretty nuts. but congratulations on the release. I haven't seen the premiere yet, but I will because I'm curious about the dialogue that was set with some of the actors that were present for the film. But tell the audience about this Hollywood Takeover documentary that you narrate slash host for Epoch Times.
Oh yeah, thank you. Did involve a lot of traveling. It was a kind of long-term project coming. It took about 2 years to do it. So basically, I cover China in Focus, so China news, and then I personally love movies, but I just felt like throughout the years, it didn't really feel like the movies anymore, if that makes sense. I would leave feeling depressed or whatever, and I didn't really know why. And so I was given the opportunity because our company was doing a lot of documentaries, and the CEO approached me and was like, hey, why don't you make a documentary about Chinese Communist Party's infiltration of the government, the US government? And I was like, no one's going to watch that. Like, I would be literally preaching at the prior choir. Like, whoever would tune into that already knows everything. But I was like, you know, if we want to talk about where the real power comes from, let's do one on Hollywood, because that is where it actually begins, right? This soft power or cultural influence that you want to talk about. And then eventually we notice that that impacts politics down the road.
Yes.
So I just felt like this would be a much better way of getting the message out there, but actually really exposing where a lot of the changes we might be seeing in society actually stems back from. So in the Communist Chinese Party, art doesn't serve just art. There is no art for art's sake. It's since Mao Zedong, it's become a tool or a weapon of the Chinese regime. It serves the cause of the state, the party, and it's part of their, you know, global ambitions of hegemony, where you can't have two superpowers. So that means the US has to go, the free world has to go. But then they use that as a weapon, basically, right? Whereas in America, we think of arts as, you know, arts, freedom of speech, freedom of expression.
Yes.
So if we understand that fundamental difference, that lays a lot of the groundwork here. So what we noticed was, since 2012, that's when Red Dawn 2 came out. If people have seen it, the enemy is North Korea. Even some of the characters are like, North Korea. But it was supposed to be Communist China. But at that point, there's a lot of business interests in China. And so it cost $1 million to change every little star insignia to the North Korean flag. And since then, this was released in 2012. Since then, no major studio has released a film with China as the villain. So we're seeing that kind of censorship creep in. But why did it happen, right? So it goes back to money, because movies cost a lot to make. And since 2008, the Beijing Olympics, the world kind of started noticing China. They're like, oh, maybe they're not just a developing nation, even though we still call them that and give them all sorts of trade benefits. But anywho, people started noticing this massive country, massive economy. China was like, ooh, you know, we really want to get onto the world stage. We want our own Hollywood, our own major, you know, cultural influence institutions. So studios need a lot of money. The U.S. financial system wasn't doing very well. We had the financial crisis here in America.
Yes.
And so you started seeing that exchange happening, where studios on both sides were like, ooh, this is great. You know, we want to work together. We're going to do these cultural exchange, but also get that money. But the thing is, you can't just get any film into China, right? They have a lot of censors. And back then, you could only get a few in. And then that number has gone up through the years. And since the pandemic, it's come back down a bit. But one of the best ways or chances of getting a film in is if you have a joint venture with a Chinese studio, because that then has a tie to the Chinese censor in the Chinese Communist Party. And you start changing things. So, for instance, in our documentary, we have Chris Fenton. He's a film executive. He helped change Looper and Iron Man 3 to get them into the China market. And so, for instance, Looper, they literally changed the script. So Looper is a time travel story. And that's a banned subject in China, Communist China, because
I didn't know that
can't
either.
Control the past, can't control the future, or a lot harder. But they got it in. Why? Because originally, the utopia future is France. That's where the character wants to go. That's where Gordon Levitt's character wants to go. But to get this film into China, they changed it to China. It was like the utopia, the Mecca of the world. And there's a line where this character from the future comes back and talks to him and is like, you want to go to China.
Yeah,
and that did super well. Yes, that did super well in theaters. That also got the Chinese censors clapping. The movie did great in China. And then Marvel saw that and was like, hey, you know, we've been struggling to get movies into China. And they approached Chris Fenton and his team and was like, hey, you know, what could you do with a $200 million budget to get this thing called Iron Man 3 into China? But Marvel's very secretive, right? So they had to read the script in 90 minutes locked in a room and try and figure out where to start adding those China elements. But they inserted this new character, Dr. Wu, who saves the life of Tony Stark, because China likes to be seen as the innovators of the world. I mean, most of that's intellectual property theft, but that's not touched upon, right?
Yeah.
And so you have this character who saves the life of a superhero. So think about what message that's sending. And then studios are like, oh my gosh, this is great. We can go into China. We can make a ton of money. You know, all these like fiduciary duties that we have, we're paying our people. Some people see it as a cultural exchange, aspirations, two superpowers coming together, everything's great. But then through the, you know, as the years go by, people started realizing, including Chris Fenton, he was like, wait, we taught them how to fish, and now China knows how to make movies at the same level as Hollywood. They don't need us anymore. And, you know, their population likes their own propaganda films better. So it's becoming harder and harder for American studios to get in. And then at the same time, in that process of teaching them everything, America, or Hollywood especially, gave up everything that normally America stands for, democracy, human rights, all these different things, just to get part of that money. So it's gotten to the point where now a lot of people see it as really a national security threat that impacts everything.
Yeah, and that's just it. That I never actually put a year to when those influences were happening, but since you've been able to talk to some insiders, they were able to let you know around when Disney or Hollywood, but what I see at Disney as a whole, was trying to capitulate to the Chinese market. Because I do remember, I think it's the movie Gravity, where Sandra Bullock's character is stuck in space, and the way she's able to get back is to make it to the Chinese International Space Station to get back to Earth. So it's like, oh, look, China's saving you. Instead of the International Space Station, it has to be the Chinese space station.
Yeah.
In the case of Iron Man, those scenes are literally not in the American film. There were maybe a footnote at the end of the credits, and that's it. And like, that's it? That's what made it work? But I'm sure they extended the scenes for the Chinese market. But this is the same Disney that would preach over here, because Marvel, Disney bought Marvel. Marvel Studios doesn't have control over all the intellectual property of their comics division. Some of them are spread out with some of the superheroes. For example, Spider-Man, even though it's a Marvel product, the rights to the character are held by Sony Pictures. And in the case of that, Disney has no say on it except whatever they try to do through Marvel. Anyway, that's a little bit of a side note, but when they were, Disney would preach all these leftist politics and try to influence cultures here. They'll talk about how representation or any leftist ideology they're going to push through on their films, such as when they bought Star Wars, the Force Awakens film. Everybody was celebrating that there's a lesbian kiss at the very end after they have a victorious whatever. So, okay, they completely edited that out for the Chinese market. And not only that, the poster for Star Wars Awakens, they shrunk John Boyega's picture, because he's the black character, shrink him and put him in the background as much as possible compared to the American release. And going to Marvel Studios, how do you do that to Black Panther? You put his mask back on Chadwick Boseman. Like, the whole movie is about some fictional African country and this other culture. But it's interesting how the dynamics that play, because that's definitely them bending the knee to do it. And like you mentioned about if they tie themselves to some kind of a Chinese investment company, they'll be able to get a step in. I think it's called the, is it called the Ministry of Propaganda?
Yeah.
They're the ones that need to approve these things, right? Because there's a banned list of films which include The Gate of Heavenly Palace. That one was supposed to be a documentary, but labeled as a film that was supposed to be about the Tiananmen Square massacre, a question of which, why hasn't there actually ever been one? That's the closest thing to it. And China did try to get it to be removed from the New York Film Festival. New York didn't comply, as much as I recall, but they did debut it also in Hong Kong before, you know, it fell into the hands of China. But Kundun, I think I said it right. That's the Martin Scorsese film, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Is that what, I don't know if that came up in conversation, but I believe that's what got Martin Scorsese banned for a time from China.
It did, yes. Yeah. So, right, that's crazy. This is Scorsese we're talking about. Yeah. He makes this film fantastic. Everything is going great. Suddenly, you know, Tibet is a very sensitive topic to communist China because they took over Tibet in the 1950s quite brutally. So they don't like any portrayals of that reality. Same with 7 Years in Tibet that had Brad Pitt. This was a Sony film. Same thing, right? Talked about Tibet a little too nicely, the Dalai Lama too favorably. Showed the Chinese crackdown a little too forcefully. That was also pretty crazy. 7 years in Tibet, Sony, both Sony proper, not just the Sony Pictures, Sony Studios, but like Sony proper as a company, and Brad Pitt not let into China until 2014. So think about how long that is, right? Yeah. And that was a message alongside Scorsese, right? This was a message to all studios and actors being like, hey, if you cover something we don't like, you're going to be punished, and like the whole studio and everything. And so then studios are like, oh my gosh, there's so much money to be made over there, right? So now you see that type of self-censoring, and it's really hard to tell how far that goes, right? Because it's like we have these overt examples. But what about all the people who saw that and were like, oh my gosh, I can't say anything now. Like, I can't make those movies. We don't know the extent of that. Mm-hmm. But just in general, it's like, think about what that's changing. We think of the movie industry, or at least in America, right? It's like you have the freedom to cover what you want, supposedly. And then we're seeing that that's not the case, right? Because these studios need to make money, but then they don't realize it's like this is tying into China's military goals and stuff. So it's like, it's not just self-censoring in terms of, oh, maybe I just don't cover this. It's part of a whole bigger picture that many people miss. But it is crazy, right? Scorsese, Brad Pitt, these are Sony names that we all know, and then suddenly the backlash. And also Richard Gere, right? He was the biggest name in Hollywood, disappeared because he's a little too friendly about the Dalai Lama. Still is, right? So don't hear about him anymore.
And that's true. The last movie I remember him in is that Hayashi, the dog story, an American remake of the true faithful dog to a servant out in Japan. But it's a great movie. Hachi, I think his name is. Go check it out. But back to that, the whole Kundun movie, I believe the property belongs to Disney proper. And with this whole Disney Plus that they were releasing everywhere, one of the properties that's not available on Disney Plus is Kundun. You can only get it on Blu-ray because they didn't want to offend China, so you cannot access it through there. I thought they could have just censored it or at least limited it, because isn't that what they do, region-specific movies? But didn't even bother putting it on the library there. They just, you just go get it on Blu-ray. It's like, oh, okay. That's interesting. But you guys touched on Mulan in the film, the Mulan remake. It was filmed in China. At the end of the film, Xinjiang. At the end of the film, Disney even thanks China for that. The region you mentioned, though, isn't that where the Uyghurs are in concentration camps?
Yes, and you can see it in some of the scenes in Mulan, the towers. And that's how it came out, because someone, I think it was either their mother or like their friend's mother, was literally being held in that detention concentration camp, whatever you want to call it. China calls it vocational training centers, right? It was literally being held there. And this movie was being shot, and they portray the bad guys as like the Uyghurs, basically. And then in all the credits, as you mentioned, right, thanking all these different governments in Xinjiang. So you're thinking the CCP. And that caused a whole lot of outrage, because everyone sees Disney as quintessential American, right? Like American pies, American everything, Disney, family friendly. And then you're like, wait, you're literally thanking the part that's committing genocide, especially. That's in all the headlines. Yeah. And so that raised such a fuss.
Yeah. And in my case, as someone that I actually did a movie blog for about 10 years. I retired around 2010. I never stopped caring about movies, though, much like you. I love entertainment. I love the way they make them. Christopher Nolan's my guy. But most people jump on the bandwagon. I was there very early on. I actually did a celebratory stream about that, exclusive to Rumble. For those of you watching, you can only find it there. I went through his entire library of American films. I didn't touch on his British stuff. So if you're interested in checking out, go to my Rumble channel, exclusively there. And I just love the way that films are made. If I sometimes just get lost in just how did they do this film instead of paying attention to the story. So it doesn't happen with me with Christopher Nolan. I get lost in the story and appreciate the technique that it's being told. So to have that medium kind of robbed from us, where it's like it's preaching at you, it's propaganda or whatever. And there's a place and time for that. And Disney, when they kind of veered off to just preach at us and try to tell us our family values that somehow have morphed, I think what really upset me, I was excited to take my daughter, my only daughter, to watch the Mulan remake, because it was coming out on her birthday. And Mulan's one of her favorite, if not her favorite movie. And then I found out what was in it, and then how you know, like girl bossy. It got, no offense, but it got really girl bossy. It's like, okay, so she's awesome just because we have to tell her she's awesome. It's like, sorry, there's no hero's journey there. She's born awesome. She can do it all. So that kind of turned me off to it. So it was other people that told me about the content of where it was made, the Uyghur camps and all that's like, oh my goodness. And this is after Disney pulled out of Georgia. What? So saving the life of the unborn is against you. Those are your future clients. And then they do Mulan. It's like, holy smokes, you guys have things like your priorities are screwed up. But it's the almighty dollar. And they tried so hard to appease the market with Shang-Chi. It didn't even get allowed into China. Just the irony in that. It's like, that's kind of branded over there. But one thing, going back to the what you mentioned and it's discussed in the film, 2007-2008, when the studios really started noticing that, hey, we can really make money in China. That year was, well, the biggest movie of that year and in recent memory up to that point was The Dark Knight. Film with Heath Ledger, Christian Bale, directed by Christopher Nolan. And in that one, there's a moment, well, an entire sequence that happens in Hong Kong. What people don't understand that this movie, it crossed the $1 billion mark without the help from China, because China banned it, because they said it was stereotypical of the Chinese and whatever sequence was filmed in Hong Kong, that was a no-no. And Warner Brothers, how do you go back and change it? You really don't. It's a very pivotal moment, especially when you have the accountant Lau character prevalent in about half of the film. So there was no way to change it. But how much more money could that movie have made if Warner Brothers said, you know what, we can make money in China, let's make the edit, and they didn't. So I thought that was interesting. And there's a couple of more movies I'm going to mention here in a moment. But after that is when we started noticing more of the strong-arming of the censoring to adapt and change and whatever. But here's another thing that didn't come out in the film, which it's low hanging fruit. So I'm a little surprised it wasn't mentioned. John Cena went to promote Fast 9 and he mentioned Taiwan as a country. And then he did his infamous apology video.
你好中国,就是叫西娜。我必须说现在在速度与激情中,我做很多采访,很多。 所以在一个采访，我有一个错误，所有人问我如果我可以用中文，处理剧情，有人给我很多资讯 information， 所以很多采访很多 information， 我有一个错误，我必须说现在就是很重要。我爱更尊重中国跟中国人，我很抱歉，对我的错误。对不起，我很抱歉，你必须了解，我很爱很尊重中国跟中国人。 不好意思，再见。
How did it make you feel? I don't know if you're a fan of John Cena or anyone of the like, but I'm sure there were people that you might know that respected him. What was the view of John Cena thereafter? He's supposed to be like this macho tough guy, American bravado.
Yeah, that was the thing. We were going to include that, and then we cut a ton of things. So we decided to stick with like studios instead of individuals. Okay. But yeah, so... yeah, as you mentioned, right, he's seen as basically like American, right, like macho, everything. And then you see him basically like on his knees begging the Chinese people, the Chinese regime to let him back in. But I think that's a great illustration of literally what the studios were doing, too. It's like this is an individual, but like that is what you see happening. It's like if you cross a red line to China, right, that's what you have to do to get back in if you want to get back in. And what does that mean, right? We're a country that the world sees that stands up for democracy and human rights. But instead, you see examples of that, where it's like what you think as standing up for all these, you know, human rights is instead kowtowing to a regime that has some of the most repressive human rights abuses happening and unfolding even till today. And what is that doing? What is that power dynamic? And I think that's like quite concerning to a lot of Americans, especially like if you look at the Constitution and then you look at what Communist China stands for, the complete opposite ideologies. Absolutely. And then you see examples of that, right? Just the kowtowing and everything. It's like, well, what are we standing up for then if that's what we're doing. But I think you are seeing some examples. You mentioned Sony earlier, right? Sony Far From Home, Spider-Man. The last like 30 minutes or over 20 minutes ending has the Statue of Liberty quite prominent in it. It's like the massive fight scene, right?
Yeah.
Well, China was not a fan of that because it makes America look a little too great. And so they asked Sony to remove the Statue of Liberty or make it a little smaller. And Sony thought about it and was like, no, and did not enter the China market, but made over $1 billion. That was like the highest grossing film since 2019 at the time. Obviously, then Top Gun came out eventually. But like you're seeing those types of changes where studios are like, wait, hold up a minute. Like what are we doing here? Like, are we changing the entire ending just to appease that? And so I think you are seeing some examples of that. And then the opposite would be John Cena.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Top Gun. I don't think this was mentioned in the documentary. I might have missed it, because it was mentioned that Maverick's jacket had the Japanese flag and the Taiwanese flag in there. So when the trailer was released, it caused an uproar because those were censored. It was removed and replaced with other patches. But in the end, Tom Cruise, and this was partly financed by Chinese money, they left them in. So the movie ended up getting banned in China because of that. But hey, the Chinese paid for it. So that, I thought that was hilarious. But here's the thing that it bothers me, because are you familiar with the movie Midway?
That one I don't think I know.
Okay, so
maybe I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it. Okay.
Midway.
So if you keep talking, maybe it'll spark some recollection.
Midway is the retelling of the big battle that, in the Pacific between our Navy and the Japanese Navy that turned the tide of the Pacific War in World War II. So it does retell a lot of the main events leading from up until Pearl Harbor, then after, and everything the Americans had to do. Very patriotic movie made by Roland Emmerich, director best known for maybe The Patriot, Godzilla, the awful Godzilla, but Stargate, Independence Day. So he did this one. No American studio wanted to finance it. Stunned. So this one was, if I'm not mistaken, almost 100% Chinese finance, which was a bit stunning. And it's one of the most patriotic movies in the past decade. I'm like, what? It gives you the feels. It makes you cheer for America. And why would China even allow something like that? Because in the true story of the Doolittle raid, for those that are unfamiliar, after the Pearl Harbor attacks, we launched a bombing raid on Tokyo as a sign to tell Japan, we're not gonna, hide and cower. We're coming after you. The thing is, that was literally a suicide mission, with these heavy bombers having to drop their payload and fly into China and hopefully not land in the Japanese occupied territory, which a lot of them did. So some of the Chinese people there protected someone like Doolittle. And as a result of them helping Doolittle escape from China, the Japanese did kill, I don't remember how many Chinese, as vengeance for it. The Japanese didn't think much of the Chinese. And anybody that's interested, I forget what it's called, Unit 302, whatever it is. If anybody gets disgusted by the Holocaust stuff, you want to look into what the Japanese did to the Chinese and understand why they have so much animosity. I can't hold it entirely against them, because I don't recall Japan ever apologizing for it. But outside of that, time has come by. I always find it really interesting that when you see some of the more patriotic movies of recent, of late, they've been Chinese funded. Top Gun? Midway? It's like, where are the American funded prideful things? No, we have the NBA apologizing to China to make sure that they're able to go over there. But over here, they kneel for the flag or don't even bother for the flag, and they'll put on a T-shirt with bullet holes on them, BLM, we're all whichever character or person they want to put up there. But it's like, dude, stand up to actual human rights violations, or at least be consistent. And they don't. I think there was one basketball player that did, and the NBA heads had to tell them, no, you're not going to do that. And that's a whole other thing. But Hollywood takeover scratches the surface of what's happening to our entertainment as a whole, a bit of a cultural revolution that's happening, that the CCP is taking over here. And in no small favors, we have the left already doing some of that bidding. They're just like, oh, give us more money to keep doing it. So that's what I found very interesting. But this leads me to the question, was it, because you said it was a process of 2 years to make this, What was the breaking point? Which movie was the one that made you feel like, oh, it's not what it used to be, and it made you want to dig deeper into this?
I think a lot of it was the news of Top Gun when it came out, the jacket, right? Because what's more American or patriotic than Top Gun?
Yeah.
But right by the time they wanted to do this sequel, times changed. Now suddenly a lot of money in China. There's no way this movie was ever going to get into the Chinese market because it's too patriotic, but still it costs a lot. So you had Tencent backing at this massive Chinese tech giant. And so a lot of people are saying that's why the patches were removed. Just to try and see if it could potentially get into that market because it costs a lot to make, trying to make back the money, right? But then pandemic happened. Studios had to delay everything anyway, and Tencent back down. And then you see in the final one that the patches are back, right? And then it made over $1 billion as the first Tom Cruise movie to make over $1 billion without the China market either. But it is also kind of interesting because no matter like how patriotic the film is, the enemy isn't clearly stated. And if you look at the geography, some are like, you know, who could do that? It's the Chinese. But, right? Who could rival the American fighters? But not labeled. So some are like, yeah, it could be Russia, could be maybe Iran, could be China. But it's like you have all this tension and you don't really know who the enemy is. Yeah. Whereas, you know, back in the day, it was like the Russians, the Soviet Union. It's like everyone knows who the enemy is. So even now, right? But I think you are seeing those changes where there is that. But I think back to the Midway example, right? I think a lot of people forget that, we Americans used to fight alongside the Chinese, right?
Yeah.
And there is that rivalry, if you will, between China and Japan. So that we point out in the film, Nick Searcy, he's a Hollywood actor. He is coming out with his own movie that he wants to produce, trying to get some investors. And then one of the meetings was going quite well, trying to get these, you know, investors to back his project. They're trying to say, oh, like, you know, is Mel Gibson a big enough name to have in it, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end, the investors are like, you know, we get a lot of money out of China. Could you make this a little more appealing to them? And he's like, well, like, how would I do that? And they're like, well, this is about terrorists coming across the border. Can you make the terrorists Japanese? The Chinese really hate the Japanese. And he starts laughing because he's like...
I did too when I heard that.
Yeah, he's like, in what universe are these Japanese terrorists coming across the border? Yeah. Right? Like the southern border. Yeah. And he's like, he thought it was a joke. And he's like, wait, no, like I can't make the terrorists Japanese. Like even as he was saying that, he's laughing. And so he's like, that project fell through. But like even now, right, this is like post-COVID, you're still seeing a lot of investors who are doing that. But then on the flip side, you do have Chris Fenton pointing out that now there are studios who are green lighting movies where there's zero in the box for profits in China. So it's like there are a lot of studios being like, hey, this can still be profitable without banking on the Chinese box office market. And I think part of that is, you know, with COVID, we saw China have their draconian lockdowns that went on for like 3 years. Like no studios were open over there. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, doesn't matter what your film is about. No one can leave their home. You're not getting that money. So there are those changes.
Yeah, and I hope it keeps up because, the Top Gun one, we're like, oh, look, Tom Cruise stood up to CCP. That's kind of how it was being billed. They left the patches in. And when you mentioned Nick Searcy, for those you're not maybe familiar with his name, you'll probably recognize him best as Art from Justified. But I was actually stunned to see him in the, what was Dinesh D'Souza's documentary? He was in there. About the deep state lawfare. Oh, I have to find it, folks.
Police state?
Police state. Yes, that one. Yeah. So I was actually surprised to see him there. It's like, oh, so you're coming out a little more. I like this. You know, it's a brave thing to do. But it's also we're looking at because of all this, I hate to use the term wokeness, but that's what everybody else uses. They're misusing the word, but whatever. That's people understand it. The culture's understanding wokeness is just meaning leftist ideology. I had an episode where I had a buddy of mine. We're discussing did wokeness kill creativity in Hollywood? And as we discussed more, we're like, no, remakes have been a thing long before wokeness. And wokeness is just creative stuff that sucks. So that's why people don't go watch these things. Like, they're cookie cutter now. They're the same movie. And we're seeing the rise of independent artists, the rise of independent studios. The shout out to Eric July from the Ripperverse, making a just massive comic book industry come out of just an idea that he had. And iSom is his work. That's awesome. I pre-ordered from another YouTuber that's working with an artist. They're about to launch their first Western style comic book because the American comics just suck and manga has been taking over everything. But here is that rise. We're seeing Angel Studios with their own Sound of Freedom, the biggest independent film, a movie that was shelved, by the way, for a long time, but starring Jim Caviezel. And he had to come out, and because he was promoting it everywhere, including on Truth Social, they started calling him a Trump supporter, MAGA. They tried to destroy him, but Sound of Freedom went on to be the biggest independent movie ever made. And there is a hunger for that now because people realize it, that they have to vote with their wallet, and the studios aren't getting it done. They have all the money. They can spend $200, $300, $500 million on a movie, and it doesn't look any better than the $15 million that Godzilla Minus One did. You know, it's like, what are we paying to watch here? Where's the money going? So I thought that was very fascinating, and I'm hoping that things continue on. I do have a couple of things more here to tell. One of them is more specific about the Epoch Times. But before that, there was mention at the end of the film that people might be able to access a portion of it for free. Did I hear that right?
Oh, yes. So if you go to HollywoodTakeover.com, you can watch the first 10 minutes free. There's also the trailer and some other info about it. Otherwise, you can go over to the Epic Times, Epic TV, where you can watch the full documentary. It is behind a paywall, but you can also like gift it forward, where you can like pay for someone else to watch it, or like you can get like a specific link to give to a friend if, you know, if someone wants to watch it, but they don't want to pay for it. So there's also that.
Yeah. And I'm glad that I set it up this way because I wanted you to mention that, because like I said, we have to vote with our wallet. I keep saying epoch and it's epic, or
they keep telling us to do it uniform. So you still have some people say epoch and some say epic, because the issue is like, if it's a radio interview, right? I'm like Epic TV, people write in like EPIC.
I see.
And then you're like epoch, but then it's like.
Yeah, because when Larry Elder was doing the exclusives for the Epic Times, that's how he would say it on YouTube. It's like, yeah, I am saying it right. Then I hear people say like, okay, I'm confused now. But thank you for clarifying that. That does make a lot of sense. But the reason that I mentioned this, you actually noticed this very early on. I do a series every now and then on Instagram called How I Started, How It's Going. And one of them was with a response. And this is in the film too. You are the host of China in Focus. The YouTube algorithms fed me that show, and I didn't know that you started 2020, right before the pandemic, I think. I didn't know that. So that's awesome. I thought you'd been doing this a lot longer. So I'm like, oh, so I've been there since the beginning, I can say. And then I saw what YouTube did to you guys. And not just yours. Sam McCrammy's California Insider. Also, I would say you guys are tied. Maybe I edge more to Sam because I'm in California. It's like, dude, these are awesome. I may or may not appear. I cannot confirm or deny that I might show up on the program. But it's what YouTube did to your channel. When people hear demonetizing, oh, now they can't make money. It's not just that. You lose the reach. If you can't get out there, then what's the point? That's shadow banning, censorship, fact checking. All of that means it limits your reach. Freedom of speech, but not of reach, said Linda Yaccarino, CEO now of X. That doesn't sound great for X, but whatever. The point is that... I put up clips of it, and one of the clips you're in it in talking about what YouTube did to you.
Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Before we turn to today's news, we have a short announcement. Starting today, we'll share a shortened version of our program on YouTube. Full episodes can be watched on Entity's partner platform Epoch TV after sign up. We'll still broadcast Monday to Saturday at 9:30 p.m. New York time, both on YouTube and Epoch TV. We're making the change for a few reasons. YouTube demonetized us a year ago, and at the same time stopped recommending our episodes to users. Recently, they seem to have resumed part of that recommendation function, but on a limited basis. What's more, we get constant reports from viewers saying they were quietly unsubscribed from our channel without reason or notice from YouTube. For some viewers, it happened repeatedly. We aim to provide you firsthand China news you can't find elsewhere. This change aims to push that purpose even further. To sign up, please click the link down below.
guys. Also, what the CCP thugs did to the news presses over there in Hong Kong. I firmly believe, you don't have to confirm or deny this, but you, a colleague of yours, Iris Tsao, the Washington correspondent, being assaulted outside her apartment, that was entirely a scare tactic.
Yeah, at gunpoint, yeah.
That's crazy. And if I'm not mistaken, it was inside a complex. So yeah. they were waiting for inside. Oh my goodness, that is.
And they took her phone.
that is
like, they weren't asking for money. They wanted like information. They're like, give me your phone.
So you guys have been targeted. There's one movie we didn't mention from Marvel Disney that got banned from China. Doctor Strange. It was banned because for a split second, the Epoch Times appears in the background. And of course, they also blame promoting Falun Gong, which I found very interesting because you had a piece on it on yesterday's, as we're recording this, on yesterday's episode of China in Focus, as the Shen Yun artists were returning to America where they live, folks. One of the, was it immigration or customs were asking?
Tell
the audience what you just covered, because that was stunning what happened to one of these artists.
Right. So Shen Yun, I'm sure people have seen the ads, but what they might not know, this is an American company, right? It's like maybe it covers classical Chinese dance, but this is founded and started in America. It's actually based in upstate New York, where I'm in New York City, so close to where I am. Yeah. And a lot of them are practitioners of Falun Gong, this mind-body cultivation practice. But most of them are either Americans or they have, you know, U.S. passports or at least valid visas to be in the state legally. And they tour around the world. It's grown in popularity. I think they have 8 troupes now, equally big, that tour the world simultaneously. And each year it's a brand new show. So there's a lot of production that goes into it.
Nice.
And so, yeah, so these are Americans, right? They came back. They're landing at the Chicago O'Hare International Airport. And then this customs border official pulls them aside and starts asking really weird questions. So like, hey, so is Falun Gong funding you? Like all these really direct questions that it's like, it's what you would expect from the Chinese Communist Party, like one of their officers. But this is a U.S. customs official, supposedly, who was asking these. And literally on the customs website, it says like you can't target people based on like your race, your gender, or even your religion. And so the main senior dancer who was asked that was like, I don't think I have to answer this, you know?
Yeah.
And but to them, they were just like, it felt like they were in China, like the questions that they were being faced with. And then they were just trying to come home to America where they're valid to be. And yeah, this is an American company. So it's like quite shocking that it's reached that level. And supposedly some senators are calling for an investigation, lawmakers. So we'll see where that goes. But yeah, that just happened yesterday. Quite crazy. We think part of it could be, you know, just the tensions we're seeing between the countries, the record number of Chinese nationals crossing the border, maybe someone. But then the fact that they brought up Falun Gong is
very
questionable, because that is the line that the Chinese Communist Party likes to take, because something people might not know. So Falun Gong is a mind-body practice, right? That was hugely popular in China in the early 90s, including Communist Party officials were practicing this, sort of cultivating in it. But it got to the point where about 100 million were practicing in China alone. And that's more than members of the Communist Party.
Yeah.
So in 1999, overnight, there was this massive persecution campaign launched against it that goes on till today, where they are persecuted, they're, you know, jailed, tortured. The most heinous part is there's forced live organ harvesting that happens.
Thanks for mentioning that.
Because China does not, due to its tradition, people see the body as sacred and it shouldn't be like cut up, right? So you don't get voluntary organ donors normally, not at those numbers. So then since then, basically since the early 2000s, suddenly there's this massive organ trade happening in China, and doctors started being like, wait, where are these coming from?
Wow.
Doctors started investigating, and China was like, oh yeah, you know, these are prisoners who are on death row. Like, you know, it's fine. But then they were looking at it, it's like, well, you know, a lot of these criminals aren't healthy. So how are you getting such healthy organs? And then they found out most of these are prisoners of faith, or, you know, the Falun Gong practitioners who they didn't do anything wrong. It's just that they believe in truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. They believe in being better people. And because of that, they're persecuted. And it got to the point where, you know, often in the scientific realm, you have cooperation, all these different things. And so a doctor was invited to go to China to witness a heart transplant, two in a day. And he's like, that's impossible. You know, it's like, you can't predict when you're going to get a heart transplant, right? That means that someone died and has to match the person you're, you know, being transferred to. And that's, in the US, many people die waiting on the list because it's so hard to get that. And so the fact that it was being scheduled, he was like, people are being killed for their organs. And that is like the extent of what's happening, because China then became the number one for organ tourism, to the point that now you have three states coming out with bills to restrict that, just so that people aren't unknowingly helping to kill other people.
And is this a new documentary that's in the works for the Epoch TV, or is it already out? Because I did see something, some advertisement about it, or I could have jumped the gun on that one.
There's one that came out a while ago called Finding Courage. We talk about, it's by Kay Rubicek. She's actually in my film, Hollywood Takeover. She talks about covering that and then how it led to the creation of a transnational group of, international group of doctors who then came together to figure out what was happening, and then eventually led to a tribunal, an independent tribunal in London that ruled that these were crimes against humanity that were happening. And now you're seeing it change to the point that a lot of Uyghurs, the ethnic minority group in Xinjiang, like we were mentioning with Juan, they are now also the victims of that. So it's not just the Falun Gong. Like, in case people don't like the Falun Gong, it's also happening to the Uyghurs. Yeah. And in some smaller cases, probably also the House Christians. Like, China likes to say they have religion. But if you look at their churches, you have Xi Jinping on the wall next to Jesus, and their Bible has been edited. So the Christians who want to read the unedited Bible are known as House Christians, where they have their meetings underground, and they're persecuted as well. That's also illegal. And so it's, you know, anyone of faith, but not just that, it's like, you know, all the Chinese people are the biggest victims, honestly, of the Chinese Communist Party, because what the Chinese Communist Party fears the most is its own people realizing that it's an illegitimate government or ruling body. And so it does everything it can to control it. And then, as we noticed in this film, it does everything to control the rest of the narrative outside of China.
Well, and that's it's very sad. And the more people realize these things, the sicker they're going to feel about almost our entire reliance and dependence on China. One of the things that I discovered that shocked me for the COVID was that our antibiotics are also from China. Are you kidding me? Oh my goodness. It's like, okay, I knew almost everything we have that we use is built over there, but that was like, okay, it's gone too far. It's gone too long. And I think we covered a lot in this conversation, Tiffany. And I really appreciate you making the time to be here on the program. You said it was HollywoodTakeover.com where they can go see part of the film.
Yes. So the title of the film is Hollywood Takeover, China's Control in the Film Industry. But if you go to HollywoodTakeover.com, you can watch the trailer. You can watch the first 10 minutes for free and then decide if you want to pay to watch the rest or learn more about some statements from like me and the producer and some other people involved.
Yeah. And I for those of you watching and listening, you know the drill. The show notes accompany this episode, I'm going to be putting all the links that she mentioned, including embedding from the Epoch Times. I will be putting in also the premiere, the one that I said I still need to watch myself. So you can easily access it on the show notes at www.theinstagover.com. Where can people follow you, Tiffany, to stay up to date with what you do?
I'm on most of the platforms. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. If you just look for Tiffany Meyer, _ is my username. So Tiffany Meyer is M-E-I-E-R. There's a couple of different spellings, but that's mine. And then _ so that I stand out from the other Tiffany Meyers.
Of course. Yeah. Okay, great. And again, those links will be available there too. So if you're interested in inspirational quotations followed by photography of some scenic shots, that would be her Instagram. So I appreciate you being on the program and doing this, because it's not easy, especially knowing that the Epoch Times has been on the radar of the CCP. I respect what you all do. And keep going. So Tiffany, thank you. Don't hang up yet, but we're hanging up for the audience. Thank you very much. Any last words for our listening and viewing audience?
I think think mostly, you know, film is a visual medium, so we can blab all day long. But if you just watch it, you'll get a lot more info than me blabbing on. But yeah, I think it's well done. We have a lot of people who were in the industry who loved it. So it's, you know, I would like to say pretty well made.
And that's the interview. Once again, thank you very much, Tiffany, for coming on the program. Remember, everybody, any references that I made on this program are available on the show notes accompanying this episode at www.unisagova.com, including how you can see that sneak peek, or the extended sneak peek to Hollywood Takeover, which I highly recommend you check out. But anyway, that's it for this episode. Remember to like, share, and subscribe to Stay in the Know. Follow me across the socials at @TheAndresSegovia, Twitter / X _AndresSegovia. And I'll see you in the next one.